Today we're starting the podcast not with a song, but with a fun fact. Did you know that if you're laying in bed with no underwear on and you fart, you're spraying poop particles all over your comforter?
I just want to let you guys know she did not run that by me. She did not run that fun fact by me.
No, because I thought of it just now.
On your comforter?
If you fart in your bed with no underwear on, you're spraying literal microscopic pieces of poop into your bed.
That's genuinely so sick.
Isn't that whenever I fart in my bed and I'm not wearing pants, you're that's like, all I can think
I'm
about.
I'm a sick bitch.
And then I'm like, I'm just kidding.
You know what's so funny about that is I'm sure the girlies who get it. My man is a gassy little man. Mm. I mean, he is farting up a storm. It's constant.
You're both
hey,
always
don't fucking air me out on the podcast like that.
Well, why do you think I just thought of that fun fact? Who was farting?
Someone was farting. Oh my god, have you ever heard that song? This is our perfect opening song. She pisses when she farts, sometimes she sharts, booty rocking cowgirl coming to my barn.
Never heard that. You're so ADD though. What were you saying about your farting ass boyfriend?
See, my boyfriend, and then he farted, and then
I farted, and then
they're like, fuck this podcast. he farts, the bed's full of poop. That's basically what it was. Okay. That's where I was getting. But he wears pants, so. So hey, baddies. Welcome back to Bad Therapy. That's our little opening fact for you guys.
Episode 45.
45?
Cheers.
Tinkerella. Fun fact, did you know that if you get so drunk that you piss yourself in your sleep, there's pee particles going all over your bed? On a funny note, I do want to tell a quick little story about the one time that I pissed my pants.
Okay, coming in hot with the podcast.
Like, should I air myself out?
I was about to say, fun fact, I've never pissed myself while drunk.
I've only pissed myself one time, and I was actually roofied. So, you know,
so is this wasn't really my fault.
Well, luckily, I got home. Mm. So my friends got me home.
Okay.
I woke up like 27 hours later underneath my bed. I'd crawled into the corner like underneath my bed.
Yeah.
I was so confused. Terrifying. You know, you wake up and you're so genuinely confused.
Was it like roofies?
Like a legitimate, I went to the hospital because I was like, there's no way, pissed in a cup. They were like, you have roofifenol in your system.
Really?
Yeah, genuinely.
I've heard this story. I don't know. I didn't correlate it with the roofies.
Yeah, no, I was roofied.
Do you love that I just correlated that with a normal night?
I know, like you just thought that was average. Well, when I woke up under my bed, I didn't know where I was.
That's terrifying.
And then I was wet, and I was like,
well, if you're 27 hours.
Yeah, no, it was a lot. And I'm also like, where are my parents? Like, I was young at this point.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was fine. I wasn't sexually assaulted. Don't worry, girlies. Yeah. I just pissed myself.
So just peed all over.
Whoever did it, you wasted a roofie. Yeah. Like, that's fucked.
She didn't just pretend that she didn't.
Roofie can't keep a good girl down. Okay, no. I need to
just relax.
Stop all your head.
So we're not gonna start this podcast with apologizing or talking about any bullshit because I know we've been slacking. We have big plans for the new year. We've been trying to get shit in order, and we debated on waiting to post another pod until the new year hits. But we're here today, and we're glad to be here. It's about midnight on a Tuesday.
You know how it be up in the bad therapy house.
It's Christmas Eve tomorrow, and we're in the Christmas spirit. We're ready for the fucking Christmas spirit to end, though.
I've had enough.
If I have to buy one more present for one more person that I wasn't expecting to buy one more fucking present for, thank you so much for the presents. I appreciate you. I have to be honest, I was at work. It's so nice when coworkers bring you presents.
It's sweet. It's a nice thought.
It's so nice. One of my coworkers brought me a present, and I made a joke to like my other coworker. I was like, don't you dare buy me a gift, because I can't be buying gifts for my boyfriend, his family, my best friends, and then all of my coworkers. There's 50 of you guys. And she looked at me, she's like, and I was like, oh my god. And then I felt like a dick because I was like, thank you, just give it to someone else,
please, I beg of you. Oh, how the turntables. Do you guys remember
when I was like,
two
I
weeks
live.
Ago she's like, the holidays are so chill and nothing bad happens and I get to relax.
Yeah, no, I really, I'm never speaking highly of life again, because it really just found a way to just, I've had the worst 2 weeks of my year.
You know what though, a little life hack for all my girlies out there. this year we decided as a family, we were not doing presents. Mm-hmm. We looked each other in the eye. We said, not you.
Yeah.
Not, we're not doing it. I didn't buy a fucking present this year.
That's nice.
It has been so
relieving.
Nice.
Yeah.
Not to mention, I love, who doesn't love getting presents?
Right. But generally the presents that you receive are not things that you want or need.
It's little trinkets. It was a nice thought.
Yeah.
It was a sentiment. It was very like, we're not trying to be like annoying and like, oh, they
were ungrateful.
Yeah. Ungrateful. Yeah. But it's like, you have enough shit in your house as it is. It is so nice to just wake up on Christmas morning and bake a quiche and hang out and not worry about.
I'm literally baking a quiche on Christmas.
I know,
Christmas,
that's why I said quiche.
Oh, is that why you're...
You thought, well, I'm actually going to do a quiche too.
I don't know if you guys know this. This is the ADD pod. Madison loves to copy me. Like, she lives vicariously through my thoughts, which is crazy because we're so different.
How could I not want to copy you? You're an icon. She's a fucking icon.
She's an icon. She's,
you know what she said to me tonight? She said, well, you've never had an original thought in your life. Damn.
Yeah, I don't actually think that. I just think Madison has this tendency to like see something that she likes and just want it immediately.
I am not a super creative person
you
naturally.
You are though.
I do have like creative thoughts, but
she
like
she just, no, you're just the type of person that you like something immediately and then you want it immediately.
I'm gonna
instead
do it,
of giving it time to like have your own thought.
Yeah.
Which I've learned to love it. I'm an only child, so I used to like despise this about Madison because I was always like, that was my idea. That's my shirt.
I literally would immediately copy her.
I remember one time we were going to a festival and like I used to be super fucking annoying about my festival fits because it would take me like 6 months to like scour the internet and find all of these
things together, cultivate the perfect outfit.
No, literally, like it's so dumb thinking back. And then I remember we went to a festival and I sent Madison my outfit and then she's like, well,
perfect, I'll buy the same one.
No, literally, I was like, and this was before we were really close. And I remember being like, that's okay. You don't need to match me. It's, you can buy something. Well, let's find you an outfit now.
She's like, you don't have to wear the exact same thing. I was like, no, I think I will. Yeah. It's perfect.
And
I actually love it.
And she did. And
did we wear the same outfit?
No, but you bought the same boots as me. Do you remember? It was the boots.
No, I don't remember the boots.
The tall boots that you broke your ankle in.
Oh, well, there you go. That's what I fucking get.
But it's okay. I didn't end up wearing them because you wore them.
My bad.
But I'm saying it's like the only child syndrome in me.
To be honest, imitation is the purest form of flattery.
It's very annoying as well.
She's also the purest form of you annoying.
No, I know. It is flattering, but I think like, and it's also stupid. Like, I'm definitely not a gatekeeper. Like, you ask me like, oh, like my number one thing is if someone compliments my lips, I'm like, thanks, they're fake. Like, I'm not going to gatekeep. I'm not going to try to like, that's not even considered gatekeeping, but like in the sense of like, I'm not one
you're
to.
You're not trying to act like you're something you're not.
Or if someone asks me where I get something, I'm usually Shein. Like, quite literally, it was $7 on Shein. I think back in the day, I was a lot more superficial in a sense where I would look at girls that had like these crazy wardrobes and I always wanted them to tell me where they got their clothes, but they didn't
tell
me. Then
they wouldn't tell you.
So then I had to go figure it out for myself. And then when people would just like know or like ask me and they go buy the same thing, I was always just like,
that's weird.
I spent months trying to find this store. Which nowadays I'm like, girl,
who gives a shit? Yeah.
Put you on, girl. Go ahead. Go right ahead. It's very stupid, but it's just how I used to feel.
For me, it's just like I've never had a very secure sense of style. Not in a way that I'm like insecure, but like my style is a little weird.
Madison, like very much, and I can say the same thing about myself too, but you very much just like morph into who you're with. Like you're still you. You're not this way anymore. You used to be a lot like that.
No, I mean, honestly, being a chameleon is a big part of the reason that I'm so successful with my job.
Yeah.
It's like there's people that are like, you see them, you read them, you don't become them. Of course, it's not like you're just like becoming all the people you're around, but you know how to like be what a person needs you to be.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
You fit into any room, which is actually the quite literal opposite of me, because like if I don't fit the room,
you're leaving.
I just don't enjoy it. I don't try to fake it. Not like you're faking it, but I just like, I physically cannot enjoy myself unless I feel like I have some sort of like normalcy around me. And if I don't feel that way, it's like I can't. And I used to be like that, but I feel like I've just changed so much to the point where I'd rather just be alone than.
I feel like there's two types of people, right?
Yeah.
There's people who are like, I get along with everyone and I don't really care. Mm-hmm. And there's people who are like, I am who I am. If you don't fuck with me, if I don't fuck with you, then I'm not going to waste my energy on you.
100%.
For me, it doesn't feel like a waste of energy.
Yeah.
Because I get energy from being around other people.
Yeah.
No matter what, unless they're like a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah.
Even then.
I think I just, I think for me, the reason behind why I'm like, if I don't fuck with you, I don't fuck with you. If you don't fuck with me, you don't fuck with me, is because I'm seeking like a deeper connection.
Yeah. You don't want just like to be friends with everyone.
And I would say like, I even sometimes dismiss people prematurely just because like, it's really hard to develop a deep connection off rip. Like, you're not gonna meet somebody and feel a connection or like really get to know somebody. Even me, like, I feel like I'm pretty surface level when you first get to know me, just because like, I don't know who I'm talking to. It takes a minute for me to warm up, and so I can't expect that in return. But occasionally I will meet people where I immediately connect with them, and like, those are the people that I remember and think about and want to get to know more. And so like, if I don't feel that initially, I just don't even care to really get to know it. Obviously there's circumstances where like, you're around people a lot and then like, they grow on you and you grow on each other, and like, that's one thing. There are certain types of people and personalities where like, I'll meet you and I just know immediately whether or not we are compatible.
Whether you fuck with them or not.
And I could be, I'm not ever going to be mean to anybody, but I will just never be like your friend.
I think as I've gotten older, I've definitely become a lot more selective.
You have.
You know, when you're young and you're partying a lot and everything's fun and you're a bartender. I was just a very much so a people person.
Yeah. It didn't, we were just very social.
It didn't really affect me. If somebody was shitty, it didn't really affect me.
You're not very sensitive. Like, I'm very sensitive.
That's a really good way to put it. Is like, if you're a sensitive person, people's energy is really going to affect you.
Yeah, I'm so sensitive. Like, I remember when me and Madison lived together in San Diego, and then we'll get into the actual podcast. We would hang out with people, and I would be like, that girl was being so rude to you. And Madison's like, what?
Rude to me?
Yeah.
No, was she
like,
wasn't.
I was like, I was mad for you. It was like things like that.
I just
Madison, like,
don't really fucking care. Yeah. I was just, I don't want to say oblivious to it, but.
I think you were slightly oblivious to it, because I think if you actually thought that someone was being a dick to you, you were very like, you would stand up for yourself. But I think at the same time, you didn't really care.
But I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll pop the fuck off on someone. I'm also the most confrontational aggressive person in a situation that warrants that, but it takes me a lot to get there. And honestly, something I've learned as I've gotten older, and I'm a little bit more selective about energy, because it affects your life. It really does. The top five people, they say it all the time, top five people that you hang around are who you're gonna be.
You are who you hang out with.
Does this person help me meet my goals is a question that you should be asking every single person that's in your life, because if they don't help you meet your goals, they're taking you away from your goals.
Having people in your life that are aligned with you, aka helping you meet your goals, is the only way that you're actually going to feel fulfilled with the people and the energy that you bring around you. Like, part of the reason that I don't just like having anyone really close to me is because not only does it make me feel drained, but it just feels like I'm out of alignment with myself. And the more I stray from like the path that I'm meant to be on, the more fucked up my life gets, if that makes sense. Like, when I'm around people that I am not aligned with, not in sync with, that don't get me, I don't get them, I'm just almost trying to make it fit. It's like in relationships, in friendships, with family. If you're trying to make something fit that doesn't fit, you're going to see the repercussions of it in your life every single day. You're going to feel like every area of your life is failing and you're not going to understand why. You're going to just feel like everything is crumbling at the seams. And it's really because you're off the path that you're meant to be on. And when you're on the path that you're meant to be on, things just fall into place.
They align. Absolutely. Yeah. The people, the energy that you allow in your life becomes your life.
Yeah.
And I think we, as human beings, we go through our day-to-day life and it becomes so mundane and so ordinary, and you don't even realize sometimes why things might have gotten so off kilter until it's too late and your life is in shambles and you're looking around like, what the fuck happening?
Yeah.
But like, really, it started with Jack that you met at the bar.
It started with this like wrong trajectory that you thought spirals. These people were your friends, and then you met these people. But the thing is when you look back on these situations, these scenarios, you're always able to clock that something was off. Like, whether it was in yourself, whether if you felt like you had to prove yourself to these people or you were having to be like a try hard, which you should never have to feel like you're trying hard or being anything but yourself to be accepted by the people that deserve to be around you.
Absolutely.
If you're feeling like you're having to portray a side of you that maybe isn't false to who you are, but is like a very extreme version of yourself just to be liked by somebody, or maybe like cater to a certain personality trait of yours that's not like your usual personality trait just to be accepted or liked or feel like you fit in with a certain group, that's not the group for you.
I'd also like to say, in regards to that, if you are around people who are doing things that you feel are inherently wrong, like they are doing things that are wrong, everyone has a right and wrong meter, right? Mm-hmm. If people around you are doing things that make you uncomfortable, they're not the people that you should be around.
Yeah.
Because people that have bad moral compasses and make bad decisions and do bad things are only going to drag you down with them.
And it's so funny because I remember being young and being like very defiant and rebellious towards my parents and life and just everything, because for whatever fucking reason, we don't need to get into all that. But being around people that would consistently do things that would make me feel unsafe, scare me, make me mad, but I would never stand up to it or care. And I would just, you know, continue to put myself in these situations. And actually, as an adult, I find myself whenever I'm in a room with people and there's one person that does something that I don't like. For example, I was at one of my friend's houses one day and we had like our coworkers over, and one of them just lit up a cigarette and was like smoking it
in the house.
And the person that owned the house didn't say anything, but I was like, put that out.
You're outside.
Well, he was like blowing it out the window, but it was like, nobody wants, like, this is not your house.
That's crazy.
It's an apartment.
That's crazy.
And I remember the person, because I feel like my trauma from being young and just, and being in all these situations with all these people, like, I have a very low tolerance for shit like that. I can clock it immediately when somebody is being disrespectful or unsafe or
inconsiderate.
Inconsiderate. And I remember the person that owned the house after that, like, thanked me, still to this day, thanks me for that day, because they were like a people pleaser. They didn't know what to say. Like, they didn't want to cause a problem. But I was like, and I didn't even know that about this person. I was just like, what the fuck are you doing?
Go outside.
I used to be the type of person that would just allow these things to happen around me and allow myself to be put in situations that weren't good. And nowadays, like, I swear, the second that somebody does something that I don't like, I'm like the first to say something.
And I mean, you have to realize, sometimes people are just not that intelligent, mm-hmm. and maybe they don't realize what they're doing. But most of the time, people who make decisions like that are just inconsiderate.
Yeah, no, it's to me, like, it's inconsiderate. Or like, if someone's trying to be badass or they're trying to do something,
be
like
tough. Yeah,
I don't have a great example of this, but like playing with like a gun at like a party, like they're trying to be cool. Put that shit away.
For sure.
Or do you want to fist fight me? I fist fight someone with a gun. It's things like that where I have a very low tolerance for, because people are just doing things for attention. And,
you know, my fiance and I talk about this all the time. We talk about having children, and the state that we live in is really, really low for education. We're like, we don't really want them to go to school here. And the consensus of that is the people that your kid meets in high school, the people that your children are friends with, are way more likely to dictate how their life goes than you are. Mm-hmm. Like, you could be the most outstanding parent, have really, really good morals, really good values, really teach them how to be a good person. But if they meet a really fucked up kid when they're like 14 years old, their life could really spiral from
that. I also do think that that has a lot to do with, like for me, when I was around those people, like, you have free will as a kid. The only reason that I chose the path less traveled by, like the defiant, rebellious path, is because I didn't have a great home life. And that's not to say my parents didn't try. If you want to be a parent, and this is a whole different discussion, like, you need to make sure that you're in therapy. You need to make sure that you're emotionally, mentally, physically, financially equipped to have a kid. I know that that's not always at like people's fingertips when they do get pregnant, when they do have kids. But if you're planning to start a family, I feel like those are really important things to keep in mind, because you can be a great parent and teach them all that you need. But sometimes parents don't realize the trauma that they leave behind on their children that makes them fall into certain patterns. Yes, it's the people that they're around, and it's the children that they meet, the environment that they're in at school, but the majority of the time too, they're at home.
Yeah.
So if there's a bad home life, or if there's something going on at home, and then they go to school and they meet other kids that are also going through bad things, then they're gonna like meet each other and
replicate,
yeah, and just want to rebel. And I speak to that so personally, because it's not like I had a bad childhood, but I did have a lot going on and a lot of pain and not a lot of support when it came to my home life. And I don't think that my parents intended that, but neither of them were ever given that either. So they didn't know how to give that to me. And I feel like it was passed down. And I feel like I specifically like wanted to rebel. I remember the first time I was offered to rebel. I was so excited.
Down for the cause.
Because I had been waiting, you know, and I was a good kid too. Raised well. We had money. We had big family.
We never went without things.
I never struggled in that sense, but there were things that led me astray.
Well, and that's kind of something that we always think about also, is nature versus nurture. Are people born bad, or are they made bad? Mm-hmm. Because I've seen so many situations where you see someone who's really not a very good person, and they seemingly don't have a reason to be that way. Or the other instance, someone who has a kind of fucked up life and ends up being a really, really good person. Like, what actually makes a human being act, do, think the way that they do? Is it the way you're born or is it the way you're made?
I actually did my college dissertation on this. Basically, it's a mixture of both, obviously. I feel like that's very obvious. Yes, we want to say, like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? That we can't answer, but when it comes to nature versus nurture, there's so many different things involved. There's obviously genetics are involved, and then there's obviously the way that you're raised and the way that you're treated, and then there's also the way that the specific person needs to feel loved and feel appreciated and feel these certain things, and like certain events might trigger someone's reaction to something more than it triggers the other sibling or more than it triggers a random person. There's no like real rhyme or rhythm, because we literally, even if you're related to somebody, siblings, twins, you're still different in how you think and how you feel and like the experiences that you have, because everyone has their own perception of life. It's actually pretty crazy, because
it's so weird.
You could live the exact same life as somebody else and have a completely different outcome.
I mean, I think about that all the time, especially like me and my sister, very similar upbringing, very similar life, completely different people, like to our core, completely different outcomes. Or I think about another brother-sister combo that I know, who their dad died from a fentanyl overdose. They definitely didn't grow up like with the most secure family, and they were both like valedictorian, magna cum laude graduates, both of them. So I'm like, is it nature or is it nurture?
And I think that at the end of the day, it's kind of like, this is obviously, there's no science behind this because I haven't read into it. I'm sure there is some science behind it, but my opinion is that even if you have, let's say, like the two valedictorian siblings and then you and your sibling who are so very different, when you're giving birth, you're rolling the dice on what you're going to give birth to. Yes, the way that babies are raised, the way that children experience life shapes them tremendously. However, they're still born who they are.
That's, I totally agree with that.
So like you and your sibling are so very different. You were going to be very different regardless.
No matter what.
And I think that the circumstances that you both went through, it was obvious that you were going to deal with it differently because you were not the same person.
That's always a fear that I've had, is like, what if you birth a serial killer or a rapist or a really emotionally unintelligent person? How do you handle having a child that is so different from you?
I don't know a lot about serial killers as much as that does fascinate me, like learning about them. But I do think that the common theme that I have seen with serial killers is that although some of them may have been sweet kids and, you know, seemed normal in their upbringing or normal even in their adulthood, they do have some sort of trauma that they went through. Something fucked up that they witnessed or that happened to them that triggered something in them. And it's like, it could have, that same thing could happen to somebody else and that not be the reaction, but people just are wired differently.
Maybe it was something that was already there,
yeah,
but wouldn't have gotten woken up, yeah, if it weren't for a traumatic event. Yeah,
exactly. Or like someone just having a different reaction or a different way of protecting themselves. But then obviously there are some serial killers that are just sick in the head,
born that way. Yeah,
I do believe that, and I'm just speaking out of turn here because I have no idea, but like when it comes to serial killers, I feel like they have to have something that kind of guides that.
You're a sociopath. If you're a serial killer, that means that you're
some sort of mental illness.
You don't feel like the feelings of,
and then some sort of trauma that like,
triggered it.
Yeah.
This is why I'm so stressed about putting my children in childcare. This is why I want to really make sure that I set up my life so that I can take care of my children, because you could put your kids in daycare. One bad fucking thing happens to them. They literally become a sociopath, and the rest of their life, like, I'm not saying that would happen to every kid, but some people's psyche is more fragile.
So are people born sociopaths?
I think you're born with the potential to be a sociopath.
Okay.
Like you were born with less empathy, because less emotion.
You could say, well, that's what I was thinking. Like you could say that they could turn into one because of something. Like if that's your concern, then you should just not be concerned, because they're gonna go through something traumatic.
At some point.
Everyone goes through something traumatic. I think sociopathy is like something that, it's not like a mental illness per se, but it's definitely like a rewiring of the brain that's not normal, which is why it has its own special name for it, because not having empathy, it's like a piece of your brain
is dead,
isn't working the same way. Yeah. It doesn't light up the same way, which is what is the cause of a lot of,
but it's so funny when you look at you and me, I'm an empathetic person, but I'm not a very emotional person.
Yeah,
like is a part of my brain smaller than yours? Or
no, I think
like, how does that
is very a good question, but you're very empathetic. I would say you're more empathetic than me.
More empathetic, less emotional.
Well, I'm not empathetic. I'm just, I don't even know how to explain it. Like it depends on the situation. Like, I'm very detached from emotions generally. Like, death doesn't normally affect me. Things of that nature. Like, I'm not usually very, like, I don't know if it's because my body, like, puts up something to protect me from feeling those things or what, but I have a hard time understanding death to the point where it doesn't hit me for months that I'm sad about it.
Yeah, because your body just, like, compartmentalizes.
Yeah, like, I don't really know how to explain it, but it's not that I'm not empathetic, because I am empathetic in certain situations, but I'm also very detached sometimes.
I was talking to a nurse the other day, and she said that there's something called empathy overload. So it's basically when you are in a situation that normally would make a regular person really, really sad, really emotional, really empathetic, but it happens over and over and over and over again, and it gets to a point where you become blind to things that would normally make you really, really empathetic.
Because it's so strange, because it's like, I know that this is a sad thing, but then I don't feel anything.
Serial killer.
No, but not even that, because I'm so, like, sensitive and emotional, and I literally see, like, a homeless person sitting on the side of the road, and I, like, literally tonight, like, wanted to cry.
Yeah, but that's exactly what it is, though. There's certain things that trigger your empathy, and there's certain things that your brain has seen or witnessed or felt so many times that it doesn't have the capacity to feel it for anymore.
That's actually so interesting.
No, it really, I was super in depth with this. She was like she works down at, like, a
Should
really,
we get on the pod?
That'd be a good idea.
No, I'm so serious.
We want to start doing special, like, guests.
Yeah.
She works down at the homeless shelter. They build the homeless shelter for people, and she does the care for people who are on the streets. And, you know, the first time someone came in with their fucking leg cut off, it was really hard for her. The 10th time that happens, you don't feel anything anymore. You can't feel something over and over and over for the same situation. And I think that really correlates to a lot of our podcast topics, which is when you're in a toxic, narcissistic, abusive relationship.
To everyone on the outside, it's like, oh my God, this is terrible.
Horrible. How are you surviving?
You've been going through it for the last 8 months.
You're like, this is a Monday morning, baby.
Yeah, you're like, you know what? He told me he loved me 3 days ago.
Oh, he punched you in the face? You seem pretty cool. I'm like, yeah, really? Like, and that's the craziest thing to me. Like, the last time that I got hit really badly, I was not upset. I didn't cry. I didn't feel shit. I stayed with him like nothing even fucking happened, with a fucked up face. People were like, Madison, you need help. If you go through something over and over and over, it stops becoming upsetting. Because
you become numb.
Your brain has to put up some sort of protection for you. You can't feel intense emotions like that all the time.
Well, and, like, just so everyone knows, I'm not a fucking sociopath after what I just said. It's not like, it's like, I know, I can't give, like, specific examples, but there's, like, been times where, like, I know that it's sad, I know that I should feel sad, but I feel nothing. And it's weird, because I know I'm not a sociopath, I know I'm not that detached, and it's never anything, like, super serious. Okay, let me just say that too. It's always, like, listening to somebody's relationship problems, or, like, something that I should feel empathetic about, like, something that I should feel like, oh, that's really sad. Like, I just kind of, like, I feel nothing. I feel like I feel sympathy, but I don't feel empathy. I feel empathy when, like, animals die because animals are innocent, but I find it hard to have empathy for certain situations, and I've always wondered why. But I wonder if that's why.
Well, you know, I was just thinking about that too, because, like, with animals, I see something with an animal, I'm crying
immediately
on sight.
Yeah,
but I think that's because we cannot associate with what the animals go through.
Yeah,
and we know that they're completely helpless. So it's for somebody who does have empathy and feelings and is a good person, that's going to bother them.
And the number one indicator of a psychopath is somebody that wants to harm animals for fun. Because nobody with empathy or a heart or anything would want to kill an animal for fun, something so innocent.
It's fucking weird.
Yeah.
That, to me, that there's so much animal abuse. There's so many people that are, like, okay with it or do it. Like, I know this is dramatic, but if you're outside and I see you go out of your way to step on a bug in its natural habitat, I do not fuck with you. Mm-hmm. You're a weird person. Why are you going out of your way to kill something?
No, for sure.
That is not affecting
not
you.
Not bothering you.
In any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
That, to me, that's, like, the first sign that somebody is, like, not empathetic or not somebody that I can... Why would you go out of your way?
I think in defense to somebody that may do that, like, I think life has desensitized people to, for example, meat. Like, you talk to someone, like, oh, well, it's just a cow. Like, have you ever met a cow? Like, yeah, but it's just a cow. To me, like, a cow is just, like, a giant dog. And, like, there are countries that eat dogs.
There's no difference.
So, like, what deciphers whether, you know, like, in India, they don't eat cow because cows are sacred.
Sacred.
In Asia, they eat dogs. So it's, like, what's to say we eat pig, cow, all that? Like, who's to say when an animal is actually truly sacred? To me, they all are.
And what? Why does one have more value than the other?
Exactly. And they don't. To me, they all are. And why is one more aware than the other? You you have no idea. Did you ask it?
No, and that's the problem with our society is like we've been so conditioned that this matters and this doesn't. I was actually watching a video and it was a woman on the street and they gave her a piece of sausage and she was like, you're not one of those stupid vegans, right? Like this is real sausage. And he was like, yeah, no, we're actually out here fighting against the vegans. That's actually a dog that we grow on our farm. It's very ethical, humane, grass-fed dog. We hope you enjoy it. She'd already eaten it. She starts sobbing. She goes ballistic. How could you feed me dog? You should have told me this is inhumane. You people should be arrested. The previous statement to that was, I hope you aren't you weird fucking vegans.
Yeah.
All animals are sacred, which is why, and I was a vegan for a long time. Now I realize that there's better ways to help animals, and that's by I spend $3,000 on groceries a month. It's all grass-fed, it's all local, it's all humane. Not that I'm saying it's great either way, but it's just so funny to watch people think that they ate a dog and that be the worst thing that they ever did. Have you seen factory farming? Do you know what happens to animals in factory farms? She was livid.
Yeah.
Then he's like, oh, by the way, it's actually vegan sausage.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be pissed if I ate a dog too.
Right? No, like for sure. It is crazy when you really do put it into perspective. And like, I have had this experience recently going out of the country, seeing how, why is there a chicken head on my plate? Why is there a liver and intestines on my plate? Being disgusted. And then remembering back at home, at least this country's not wasting the animal. Absolutely. They're eating every last piece of this animal. Meanwhile, we have so much waste of animals that like we're just producing them just to kill them, just to produce them, just to kill them, not even to eat the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is the most fucked up part.
It's horrible. So you definitely, and I'm not a vegan. I never have been. I tried to be vegetarian just because like I couldn't wrap my head around eating an animal. I couldn't do it. I do also buy grass-fed, cage-free, whatever, organic, the best that I can. It's really fucked up because you can't like go to a restaurant and be like, is your beef grass-fed? You know what I'm
saying? That's exactly the point I was gonna make next. Like, you can't be perfect, right? Like, I literally was at Chili's the other day. Like, I ate a chicken dipper.
Yeah.
I'm not like shaming people.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is be better when you can.
Yeah.
And it helps. It does help. Obviously, it's an unethical business in general. Like, there's just the amount of people that we have in this world.
It's just the amount of, I think that's an issue with America and in general, is just the
overconsumption
of everything. It's like, we are the most overweight country in the world. We're the most unhealthy. We're all like autistic and dying of cancer. And it's like, there's no, but I'm being so serious. It's like over the last 50 years, like all of these things have like over 100% than what they were 50 years ago. And there's got to be something to do with what we're eating.
It's our food.
Yeah. Like there's cancers like at an all-time high. Like it's got to be something that's in our food. And I feel like we're the only country that's really dealing with this shit. We should be pissed.
I mean, like I said, we've talked about this before. I went to another country and nobody's overweight. If they're overweight, they're American. And the food has 4 ingredients. The bread has 4 ingredients. The yogurt has 2 ingredients. The expiration dates are like in a couple of days. The food is fresh. You just feel different. I didn't even get hung over there.
Yeah.
And I was drizanking.
Yeah. There's something to be said about the way that America treats us in terms of what they put in our food and what they allow us to eat and what they don't tell us about what we're putting in our bodies. Why are we allergic to gluten? But we're not allergic to gluten when we go to Italy. Why is the alcohol here make me feel more hungover than the alcohol in a different country? Why is the produce fresher in other countries? And why is the produce here covered in pesticides giving us cancer?
Here's the real question. Why are they so comfortable making us sick so they can make more money?
Why are things banned in other countries that aren't banned here?
Red dye number fucking 40. It's in everything that I pick up.
Everything.
Everything. That's literally illegal in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
You because can't have it.
Because it's toxic.
It causes cancer.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a question anymore.
Yeah.
And we just like fucking shove it in our gullets. We don't even care. Okay, pivoting the topic. The most important decision that you will ever make in your life is who you decide to marry. So when you're dating, don't just be dating someone because you want to date them. Think about them as the person that you are going to marry. And the reason that I bring this up is because off camera we were talking about iPad kids. And I just think about like if I married someone who was very checked out or very like okay with that kind of life, and we're like, just stick an iPad in front of their face. And that's how they want to parent. If that's the opposite way that you want to parent, you know how fucked up your kids are going to be, your family's going to be, your life is going
to
be?
Yeah. I can't speak to like what it's like having children. I am assuming that it's probably nice to just stick an iPad in front of their face and have them be occupied. But I'm somebody that doesn't really know how to deal with kids, never really been around them, doesn't know a lot about them. However, I know when I was a kid, I loved to play outside. I loved to play with my toys. I loved to play make-believe house. Like, I was at the store earlier and me and my boyfriend were looking at, there was like this kid's toy toy was like a broom and a mop. And I was like, oh, we should get them this for a joke. But then he was like, you know, kids like that stuff. And I was like, you know what? I actually would have been the kid that would have liked, you know, to play
kids
house.
Like playing house.
Pretend
yeah.
to sweep. Like, you want to pretend to be, yeah, like pretend to be an adult and do adult things. And that's the type of shit that you should be giving your kids to play with. Because I understand that iPads are something that entertain them, and like all of the kids around them have iPads and they want
makes
that.
It so easy.
I'm so glad that I wasn't allowed to have any of that, nor was it around when I was that age. But let alone, like, I remember when the first iPhone came out, I think I was in like sixth grade. My mom wouldn't let me have one. Everyone else had one around me. I was mad, but I've been glued to it since I've gotten it. It's like a universal thing. It doesn't matter how old you are. You're glued to your phone, to your screen, the second that you have it. If you have children and you can prevent causing them that stress, because all it is stress, and it's bad for you and it's brain rot.
It's dopamine dependency.
Yeah.
You get constant dopamine hits, but it's not real dopamine, and you become addicted to it. Because let's be honest, we're all so fucking addicted to our phones. I just installed an app the other day on my phone that like blocks you from going on social media.
You're such a, like, extremist.
I know. Well, because I was like, I'm spending too much time doing yeah. something that doesn't serve me.
See, but like,
me.
If I had something that was blocking me, I would be like, well, delete.
You know, I'm not gonna lie. It hasn't been, like, super successful. Yeah.
But you're trying.
I'm trying to have more real dopamine in my life and less fake dopamine. Yeah. Like, more outside time. More doing things that make me feel genuinely happy and fulfilled. Because I realized when I'm not being stimulated by something, usually my phone, I feel very anxious.
Yeah.
If I'm driving or whatever it may be.
You said you did, like, when you were doing your really deep life therapy, that they were having you meditate. Did you never continue that after?
So if I'm like feeling really, really terrible or really anxious, that is the first thing that I revert to. And it helps so tremendously. I should have kept it up every single day because
it's really hard though. It's very boring.
Oh my gosh, it's so, but that's the problem. It's like you have to be okay
being still
without being stimulated. Yeah. And you have to be comfortable with that. And that when you're still is when you realize the feelings that you actually have and where they actually come from.
It's actually so crazy that you just said that, because being anxious and wanting stimulation is actually the cause of your anxiety. Whereas if you can be comfortable with nothingness and sitting with no stimulation aside from your own heartbeat and your own thoughts and your own body, and that's such a scary place for a lot of people to be. And I think that's why people say to meditate. And meditation for me has always been hard because I can't really focus and I have really weird sensory issues. So when I'm really still and I'm not thinking about anything or I'm just like focused on my body, I start to feel like, oh, my socks are on too tight, or oh, yeah, my heart's beating too fast, or oh, my hair is itching my neck. Like, I just feel too aware. But like, there was a phase in my life where I did this a lot. And I remember there was one time I was like walking down the stairs and there was a couple occasions where something really crazy like this happened. I remember I dropped something and I caught it behind my back without even looking, and I remember being like, I just felt so in sync.
Yeah,
with, like, the, if this is gonna sound crazy, like, with the universe, I felt like I was a part of this matrix or this simulation. Like, I had entered into this realm that made everything feel like one. And I know that sounds crazy, but when we're so in our heads and when we're so occupied by outside stimuli, it's hard to really feel like you're a part of this. And I remember when I was really trying to meditate because I was going through something, and it's only ever when I'm really going through something, but it does help. I remember feeling very connected, not only to myself and what I was thinking and feeling, but like to every motion, everything around me. It was actually very cool.
Well, that's because it all comes down to energy. Yeah. And that's something I really learned when I was meditating a lot, is like when you are so internally focused and internally locked in, you can actually feel the energy circulating through your body.
And I don't like that feeling.
It's crazy. You can feel it. Like when I used to not be able to sleep and I was really focused on this practice, I would move the energy from my toes all the way up to my body through the top of my head. And by the time I got to the top, I was ready to fall asleep.
And then you could release.
And you can actually genuinely feel that. But when you're constantly being stimulated by outside sources and you're constantly having dopamine, 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 your body cannot even understand how it actually feels.
Mm-hmm. And talking about needing instant gratification, aka dopamine hits through social media or who you choose to love, I think in a world where instant gratification is so prevalent and it feels like the only way that we know how to recognize true happiness, it's so toxic because there's actually so many things that don't give us immediate gratification. gratification and instant dopamine that are really good for us. And I feel like relationships are something that don't always come with an immediate feeling of happiness and gratification. Like they're work. And one day you might feel like you're super in love, and the next day you might feel like you're kind of over it because it's not giving you that immediate gratification that you're so seeking. But that doesn't mean you still don't love that person. But I think in this day and age, because we don't feel that hyper intense feeling of love and validation and that craving for that person, because that's what we're told love is, we don't want it because it's not giving us that dopamine hit. But something really important that I've learned is that love is an action and a choice, not a feeling. And if you view love as a feeling, then you're just setting yourself up for failure, because feelings change all the time. You can't base your entire life off of what you feel in this very moment. You have to give shit time, and you have to look at the big picture. Is this person that you're with making you happy, treating you right, helping you meet your goals, somebody that you can see a future with? Or do you just love them and want them because they're giving you that instant gratification? Because let me tell you what, that instant gratification, that feeling of happiness, that giddiness, that those butterflies, they're gonna go away. And I used to worry about this when I was younger, because I was in a very long-term relationship with someone that I really loved a lot. And I had never been raised around a long-term relationship. My parents were divorced. My mom was in a relationship. They just split up. I was worried up until recently. Actually, I still sometimes worry about this. However, I feel like I have less of a worry now that I'm older. My worry was, does love truly last forever? The answer to that question is, love is a choice. Will you always feel that fiery spark? Probably not in the same way, but can you choose to be with somebody regardless because you want to be with them, you want to be loved by them, and you want to love them? Because love is a two-way street. You're choosing to put your all into somebody else, and they're choosing to put their all into you. And I think that's the main reason why relationships nowadays don't work out, is because maybe one person is committed, but the other person might not view it the same way.
Absolutely. And I think that that is so true in so many ways, because love is making your partner's coffee in the morning, whether you guys got in a fight the night before or not. Love is showing up for somebody even when you are tired or you don't want to. We have said this so many times. You choose to love somebody. All of this toxic, narcissistic, crazy, unhealthy relationship stuff that we have talked about, that love is not sustainable.
Yeah.
That love is going to be very partial and very unforgiving. Mm-hmm. If you want to have love with somebody, you choose to love them based off of their morals, their values, the way that they treat you, the way that they treat others, and the way that you treat them.
Yeah.
They should bring out the best possible version of you, and you should want to continue to love them even when you don't feel like you're madly in love with them.
And I remember when I first had this concern, I was in a long-term relationship and I loved this person. I was very, very young at the time. Obviously, this person's engaged now. I'm in a relationship. We went on different paths. Things happen for a reason. But I think back to those days and I remember thinking, wow, a couple years ago, I used to really love you, and I feel like it's dwindled. And it's not that I loved this person less, which was actually a very hard lesson to learn for me, because losing them, realizing that I actually like really cared for this person, was really, really, really traumatizing for me because I made the decision to leave. But I was too young to understand that the way love works, it's not always going to be that fairy tale feeling like it is in the beginning. Like, that's the honeymoon phase. That's the everything's perfect phase. And even a couple years in, you can still feel that way. But then it gets to a point where you're kind of like, and I was, again, too young to realize this at the time. I was too young to be able to say, it's a choice to love you. I was too inexperienced to know what else was out there. Like, yeah. I thought maybe there was something better out there. And a lot of the times, I think that is the downfall of a healthy relationship, is when somebody in the partnership thinks that there is maybe something better suited for them out there.
Absolutely.
Is that always the case? Probably not. Sometimes maybe, but I think it's really important to recognize what you have right in front of you and be able to appreciate that. Even if you're not feeling those sparks and those butterflies that you felt in the beginning, that doesn't mean that your love has dwindled. It just means that you are on a different path, and now is the time that you get to choose to love this person.
And try. Yeah. It's like you have to make an effort to keep your love alive, because I think a lot of people could hear this and think, okay, well, our love's going to be there either way. But you have to choose to make the decisions to keep your relationship happy and healthy. So even if you're not feeling madly in love, you still have to make the choices that makes that person feel loved.
Yeah.
I saw something the other day that I loved, and it was a man saying he noticed his wife pulling away, being very naggy, bitchy, nonchalant, uninvolved in the relationship, stopped doing the things that she used to do. And he was like, his initial thought was to blame her. Mm-hmm. Like, she's fallen out of love. She stopped trying. She doesn't want this anymore. But then he looked in the mirror and he thought, how am I treating her? Mm-hmm. How do I treat my woman to make her feel like I'm still in this? So he started trying again. He started buying her flowers. He started taking her out to dinner. He started being kind and reciprocative and sweet. Literally a week later, she is back to being the woman
that he fell in love with. One thing that I will say to anybody in a relationship is the most important thing that will always matter more than anything else is the little things. It's the way she likes her coffee made. It's the way you compliment her hair when it's messy. It's the way you take her to her favorite restaurant. It's the way you compliment them when they're not looking their best. It's the way that you give them a kiss goodbye in the morning before you leave for work. It's the way you come home and you greet them with a smile. It's literally the small things. It's the way you see her favorite snack at the store and you bring it home for her, even though she didn't ask for it, but you know she likes it. It's the little things. It's never anything extravagant that means the most. It's always the things that are small that truly show how much you care and recognize and remember and love the person that you're with.
And the consistency. I think it's so important to have consistency in love, because I read a study that said if you come home every day and you don't even acknowledge your partner, or you say hello in like a very nonchalant way, that's how they become your roommate.
Yeah.
How would you greet your roommate? How would you greet your wife?
Yeah.
You come home, you kiss her, you pick her up, you spin her around, you put her on the countertop. You make an ordeal out of just coming home from work because you've been gone for 8 hours.
Because you should want to. Even if you don't feel that spark and that fire, it's like if you're in a long-term relationship and you want to feel that spark that you felt in the beginning, then just make it happen. Let her come home to a spaghetti dinner with wine and pick her up and spin her around and dance with her with some music
on. Smack her on the butt.
Or have him come home to you in his favorite lingerie that you own with his favorite cookies on the counter. Like, you have to equally put in an effort to make the relationship work. And when they say, like, you got to bring the spice back into the relationship, you got to keep things exciting, that's what they mean. They mean, like, think about what your partner likes and try to bring the spice back, because it doesn't mean it needs to end just because you've been together for 6, 7, 8, 10, 2 years. It was there once. And if you're missing it and craving it, it's not gone.
Go find it.
Yeah, go get it.
You're not going to find it any differently in another person.
No.
If you can't have that consistency and love with the person that you chose to marry, why would you think that you're going to be able to find it with somebody that you don't know?
Yeah.
Like, thinking that there's something better on the other side, it's just going to be the same thing.
Especially if, like, you're not a toxic couple. And
this is in regards to people who are with the right person.
Yeah, somebody that's healthy and happy. Like, hear me when I say this. The grass is not greener. You might feel your situation isn't what you thought it would be, but there was a time where this was all you wanted. Think back to that moment and think to where you are now. Life changes. Thinking that leaving the relationship you're in will be better is not the answer. You've built a foundation with this person. You love this person. You know this person inside and out. You know what they like. They know what you like. Why would you walk away from that just because the spark is gone? Let me tell you what, if you have that mentality, the next relationship you're in is going to be the same way. You're going to be hot and heavy in the beginning, and then it's going to die down and it's going to fizzle out and you're going to be on to the next. If you really want a life partner, then you have to learn to appreciate what you have when it's right in front of you and work for it.
But also, if you want a life partner, you have to make sure that you're choosing to be with somebody who has the characteristics of someone you could spend your life with. Because this isn't going to be as simple with if you married somebody who doesn't try and never really did, doesn't care and never really did. If people don't care about you, they're going to show you in very small ways every single day. You just have to pay attention. That is not the person who you should choose to build your life with. Build your life with the person who respects you, who loves you, who has morals and values that match your own. And you will be able to find that love again, even when the spark goes away. Why do I sound like I'm gonna cry? And on that note, bad therapy baddies.
You guys, it's been exactly 1 year since we started the podcast. And it's been a great year. And next year has so much more to come. So if you've been here since the beginning, we love you so much.
Special special guests to come, a new studio to come.
Just let us cook. Let us cook.
Enjoy your families. Enjoy your friends. We love you. Thank you for your support.
Send us gifts to, I'm just kidding.
We just talked about how we don't want them.
I'm just kidding.
Cheers, baddies.
Love you guys.